Om Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadi Gaurakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Was this a bookmark was put here or a bookmark was not put here?
This is the.
Huh?
This is the last place.
In the other computer, it was put. Because this has a longer battery.
Uh-huh. Okay. The individual spirit souls are all his servants. Eternal service to the Lord is the soul's eternal duty and eternal nature. On his own power, the individual soul is not able to do anything. By performing materialistic activities, karma, the individual soul cannot attain any result that is eternal. However, by obeying and serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the individual soul can, by the Lord's mercy, attain the fulfillment of all his desires. The previous two classes of human beings are called Karmakandi, they who perform material pious deeds, and two, Gyanakandi, impersonalists. The third class is called Ishabhakta, devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The Karmakandis and Gyanakandis are proud to call themselves seekers after the highest spiritual goal. However, the truth is that they are materialists. They are materialists because they are pushed by material motives. Whatever pious deeds they perform are all pushed by personal material motives. Is it something they want? Devoting means you're doing it to please the Lord. That's devotion. But then here is they're performing their pious activities to get a pious result, and the impersonalists are performing their duties because they want to merge into the Brahman. It's not that the Brahman wants them to merge into Brahman. They want to merge into Brahman. They have their own purposes to fulfill, like that. But the devotee then has no purpose. The present-day worshippers of Shiva, Durga, Ganesh, and Surya are all followers of Gyanakanda. When such persons engage in the devotional activities that begin with hearing and chanting, their goal is to attain impersonal liberation and become one with the Supreme. So then they're worshipping here. It means these are of the Panchupasana, so present-day worshippers. So this is a Vedic thing that they take these five, the Upasana Khanda, and you have these aspects. So then Shiva, Durga, Ganesh, and Surya. I think we discussed this. Shiva is specifically impersonal. Durga is the material energy. So that's Anamoy. Ganesh and Surya, that's Pranamoy. Ganesh means that you respect certain groups of life. And Surya means that you respect life in general. Like that. So they're worshipping this with the ideas that then they'll get beyond. You know, they use the process of bhakti, but their purpose is impersonal liberation. They're not trying to get something more. They who do not have material sense gratification or impersonal liberation as their goal, when they perform the devotional activities that begin with hearing and chanting, are devotees of Lord Vishnu. They worship the deity form of Lord Vishnu. So these others may be worshipping, performing service, and they'll call it devotion. They'll say so much devotion to Ma Kali, this, that, you have all these things. But one is doing this worship because their interest is to get some benefit, impersonal or karmakandi, through the result. So those who work, and then he's making distinction here, so those who are worshipping Lord Vishnu, because he's saying here, Shiva, Durga, Ganesh, Surya, definitely then they're going for impersonal liberation. But then there's those who worship Vishnu. So because Vishnu is the fifth in this whole Panchupasana. So then those who are worshipping Vishnu with the desire for material sense gratification, those may be Karmakandis, or with purpose that they will still attain Brahman realization, just that they are accepting worship of Vishnu as a path, then they're materialists, that those who worship Vishnu without material motive, without wanting to merge into the supreme, then those are devotees, so those are bhaktas. The form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternal, spiritual, and all-powerful. If the Supreme Personality of Godhead were not the highest object of worship, then it may be said that worship of Him is temporary and not eternal. Yeah, so these others, because they're not eternal, so therefore their worship, the worship process of worship and the benefits will not be eternal. But since Vishnu is eternal, then worship of Him is eternal. Son, the service you offer to the deity form, this is Lahiri Mahashai speaking to his son, Devidas. Because he's into the logic, he's an impersonalist, he's an atheist, and he's very expert at all these different forms of ritual and different things. So very much he may be into, in their house I think they worship Vishnu, but these others are all there. That's the Hindu thing, is you worship everybody. Like that, probably even told that during World War II there was a man in Calcutta on his altar, besides the other myriad of gods and pictures, he had a picture of Hitler. And then he was asked why he has a picture of Hitler, why he's worshipping. He says, because of him, my business is going so good. Because it was war, so he manufactured something that the army was buying, so therefore, a great man. Great for you, you know? Like this, so. Everything goes on the altar. Someone else, they have everybody there, and they also have Jesus, you know. They just want to make sure that, you know, it's like, they don't want to miss out, just in case, you know. Just in case He is God, you know, then we'll do something. You know. Yeah, that's the Hindu idea. Son, the service you offer to the deity form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead will not bring you the highest spiritual benefit. So they are worshippers of Vishnu in His house. Why not? Because you do not think the Lord's form is eternal. Therefore you are not a devotee of the Lord. Do you understand the difference between worship that is eternal and worship that is temporary and pushed by material motives? Yeah, so they're doing, but his purpose is either impersonal liberation or some fruitive, or sometimes they do both. Ultimate is that, but they want immediately, you know, all the things that they're here. Because if he was really serious about impersonal liberation, then he would have taken sannyas, right? Because that's Shankara's position. Is that if you're really into impersonal liberation, then how you can be into liberation if you are moving in this world of illusion and thinking it's valuable. So therefore sannyas is the beginning stage of serious pursuit of impersonal liberation. So then as a grihastha, Devidas, then naturally they'll think that is the highest goal, but in the meantime, before we get there, then we would like all our nice material desires taken care of. Like that. So you see, that's the common thing of those who worship Buddhist Panchopasana, is that as grihasthas they want all the stuff now. And then later, then they'll renounce and then, you know, attain perfection. Like this. So it's an interesting mix. Like that. Devidas, yes, if one does not think that the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and one's worship is Vishnu, it's not eternal worship. What's that? Editing problem here. Yes, if one does not think that the form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is eternal, then one's worship of the Lord is not eternal worship. But why can one not employ a temporary kind of worship to seek the eternal truth? So he's saying, why can't we use a temporary, because that's their thing in the impersonal. We'll use a temporary method of illusion to get ourselves onto that transcendental platform. And then at that point, then we reject the process that we used. Lahiri Mahashaya, you cannot say that the worship you perform is eternal worship. The worship the Vaishnava's form is eternal. The form of the Lord is eternal. Their worship of that form is eternal. And all in relation to them are eternal. Therefore, the Vaishnava religion is eternal. Devidas. The Devi form of the Lord is a statue made by a human being. How can such a form be eternal? Mahiri Mahashaya. The Devi form worshipped by the Vaishnavas is not like that. First, the Supreme Personality of Godhead is not formless, like the impersonal Brahman. The form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead is all-powerful, eternal, and filled with knowledge and bliss. That is the Lord's form that should be worshipped. In the beginning, the Lord's form is manifested within the individual spirit soul. Thus, the Lord's form appears in the living entity's heart. Then, when bhakti yoga, devotional service, is manifested in the heart, then the Lord's form also appears there. When a devotee sees in his heart the spiritual form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the devotee knows that this is the same form manifested externally as the deity. The impersonalists do not worship the form of the Supreme Lord in this way. They think the deity is a statue made of material elements, a statue that, while it is being worshipped, is imagined to be the same as the impersonal Supreme. However, the truth is that the deity form of the Lord is not at all a statue made of material elements. In this way, the impersonalists and the devotees have very different conceptions of the worship of the deity. Worship of the deity of the Lord. By the mercy of a bona fide master, one may accept the Vaishnava initiation. Then one is able to directly see that the deity of the Lord is not a statue made of material elements. Devidas, I see that the Vaishnavas are not fanatics. They see very subtle things. The worship of the deity form of the Lord and the worship of a material statue are very different indeed. However, I do not see any difference in the external actions of these two kinds of worship. The difference is in the spiritual faith of the worshipper. I will think about this subject for a few more days. Father, I have one big doubt. As far as I am able to understand, the impersonalist worship of the Lord is merely a form of cheating and trickery. At a later time, I will place this question before your feet. After speaking these words, Devidas Vidyaratna went with Shambhunath to their host's house, where they spent the remainder of the afternoon. Still, they did not find an opportunity to talk amongst themselves. Everyone at that house found all their happiness in singing the holy names of Lord Hari. Yes. The next afternoon, they all went to the Paramahamsa Babaji's terrace. There, Devidas Vidyaratna, Shambhunath, and Lahiri Mahakshai stayed close together. At that time, the Qazi of Brahmana Pushkarini also came in there. Brahman Pushkarini is Bhaman Pukur. That's the Bengali pronunciation. So Brahmana Pushkarini then means that place up there, like where Chankazi's samadhi is, also came there. Seeing the Qazi, the Vaishnavas respectfully stood up. Happily greeting the Vaishnavas, the Qazi entered the terrace. The Paramahamsa Babaji said to him, "We are now fortunate, for a descendant of the Chan Qazi, who received the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, has come to visit us. Please give your mercy to us." The Qazi then said, "It is by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu that I have received the mercy of the Vaishnavas. Lord Chaitanya is the master of my life. I do not do anything without first offering my dandabad obeisances to him." Lahiri Mahashaya was fluent in the language of the Muslims. He had studied the Quran and also many books of the Sufis. To the Qazi, he addressed this question, "What is your idea of liberation?" The Qazi replied, "Where you use the word jiva, individual spirit soul, we use the word ru. The ru has two states of existence. One, ru mujaradi, and ru tarkibi. What you call chit, spiritual, we call mujarad. What you call achit, matter, we call jisham. The spiritual mujarad, is beyond material time. The material world, jisham, is subject to time's control. The tarkibi ru, or badajiv, conditioned soul, is filled with material desires. his mind is filled with material ideas. The Mujaradru, liberated soul, is pure and free from these contaminations. A person who says, Alam Misal, I am spirit, is able to become a Mujaradru, liberated soul. By the gradual development of esk, spiritual love, the Ru, soul, becomes purified. A great saint goes to the abode of God. He does not stay in the material world. In that spiritual world, he is the servant of God. Servant and God is the master. The soul and God have that relationship eternally. The attainment of that pure relationship with God is called liberation. The Sufis explain the Quran in that way, but not everyone is able to understand this explanation. By the mercy of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Chankazi understood this and taught this to me. In that way, I know that you are all pure devotees of the Lord. Lahiri Maharshi, what is the teaching that is at the root of the Quran? Kazi, there are many teachings in the Quran. I cannot single out a particular kind of worship to tell you. However, the purpose of life is to worship God. When they see the supremely blissful Supreme God, all people become plunged into the transcendental bliss. Lord Chaitanya has explained in this way. Lahiri Maharshi, how does the Quran describe the form of God? The Quran says that God has no form. However, Lord Chaitanya told the Qazi that the meaning of these words of the Quran is that God has no material form. The Quran does not mean to say that God does not have a spiritual form. The Prophet himself saw the form of God, which is filled with transcendental love. He also described all the rasas, but only in a concealed way. Lahiri Maharshi, what do the Sufis say? Qazi, their philosophy is Anul Haq, which means I am God. In this way, the philosophy of the Vedic impersonalists and the Muslim Sufis is the same. Lahiri Maharshi, are you a Sufi? Qazi, no, I am a pure devotee. I have surrendered my life to Lord Chaitanya. Thus talking about many things, the saintly Qazi and the Vaishnavas treated each other with great respect. Finally, the meeting ended with a great chanting of the holy names of Lord Hari. Chapter 6. Eternal Religion and the Differences of Caste. Nitya Dharma or Jati Varnani Veda. Okay. Devidas Vidyaratna was a teacher. For many days he had complete faith that the Brahmanas were the best of all castes. He thought, none but the Brahmanas could understand the spiritual goal of life. Without first taking birth in a Brahmin family, no one can attain liberation. It is by birth that one becomes a Brahmana. When he heard the conversation the Vaishnavas had with Chankazi's descendant, he became very disgusted. He could not enter into an understanding of the truths explained by the saintly Qazi. In his mind, he thought, the Yavana caste certainly acts strangely. No one can understand the meaning of what they say. Ah well, father could read Persian and Arabic. He has spent many days studying religion. But why does he respect the Yavanas so? In that assembly, why did Vaishnava Das and the Paramahamsa Babaji show so much respect to a Yavana, whose contaminating touch makes one take a bath? That night he said, Shambhu, with the fire of logic, I will burn the philosophy of the offenders into ashes. Ah. It was in Navadvip that Sarvabhauma and Shiromani discussed the Nyaya Shastra. It was in Navadvip that Raghunath churned the 28 truths in the Smriti Shastras. 28 truths from the Smriti Shastras. Who's Raghunath? Raghunath's one of the commentators? Anmana?
Raghunath Shiromani, I think so.
Huh?
I think so.
Uh-huh. No, he said from the Smriti Shastras. Because it says here 28 truths.
Raghunandana. Is it Raghunandana?
It just says here Raghunath. And it may be Raghunandana, but here it says Raghunath. But it says here 28 truths, so that means there must be 28 essential points that the Dharma Shastras are making. How can Hindus and Yavanas mingle together in this way, in this same Navadvip? Perhaps the teachers of Navadvip do not understand how they should act. In one or two days, this Vidyaratna will do something to set this situation right. Okay. fired up. Like that. So the Prabhupada makes the point is that there's the Daivavarnashram, which means that by one's nature, you know, whatever is the nature and one's abilities, activities, this establishes what the varna that one should follow. Varna simply is just what is the suitable occupation that someone should be engaged in. That's all it means. It's just, and then accordingly, then how does it connect to something? It doesn't make something necessarily less or more, but because of the nature of things, then they are connected when they connect with something else. It's only in relationship. On their own, you know, then they stand in one way. But when one thing meets another, there must be some way that the two can combine. So then there must be some adjustment to it. You know, therefore, then let's say you have a kshatriya. On their own, then they have a mentality which has its own nature, and a vaishya has their own nature. But when they then meet, then because of the nature of the vaishya and the nature of the kshatriya, then the vaishya will be take a junior position to the kshatriya for that. But otherwise, when the vaishya is on his own, then it's another thing. He doesn't have to. You know, it's not a matter of higher or lower or anything. But then depending on what he meets, then Vaishya is walking. So then because he's walking on the road, then it's Vaishya and road. Then how does he deal, you know, on this? And then on the road, then let's say there's some ants. So then it's the Vaishya and the ant, you know. So then he doesn't step on the ants, you know, like that. And then he gets to the house, and then there's the Vaishya and his son. So the nature of son and the nature of father. Then that comes into father on his own is just a person. Son on his own is a person. But when you put the two together, then you have father and son. Does that make some sense? In other words, the whole thing is when something is mixed with something else, that's then when you have to see what are the relationships, and then you put something maybe superior or inferior or leading or following or something like this. So that just it establishes how people can act together. It's considered, some will consider it's old and archaic, and then the new modern, you know, theories, all this new age of the individual and caring and all these things, and you know, being how you say, accommodating and all these things. But it's very unscientific. A little bit is there. It's something, very minor. But the Vedic thing is actually so far advanced that it's not that it's regressive, it's so progressive that the modern theories are, you know, so far behind. Difficulty comes is when people don't understand how to use it. But that doesn't make the thing bad. You know, if you have a madman with a knife and goes and hurts people, you can't say the knife is bad. You know, it's the person using it. So therefore the Varnashram system takes the individual nature to the deepest degree. You know, what is the nature of the body, what is the nature of the mind, the intelligence, the ego, you know, the material desire. All these different things are seen. And then you decide what is necessary for that nature. And then you have all the natures. And then how does this nature blend with that nature? And under what situations and conditions? Like that means that there's certain times you can do something. Like in the middle of the night, you know, then it's you and your bed. It's not you and a plate of prasadam. Right? That you and a plate of prasadam is a bona fide connection. But it has its time. You know, if your body is hungry, then you can eat. If you're not hungry and you eat, you'll get sick. So there has to be some restriction so that the two can go together nicely. So the prasad's okay, we're okay, but you have to know how to combine them. You know, and then what kind of prasad for what kind of the day or what weather or what is our condition. Like if our stomach's not good, then we eat all kinds of very rich things,
it'll be a problem. Or it's very cold and, you know, the health is good and we eat very light things and we won't be satisfied. You know, so like this we have to be very, very, we have to know the science of relationship like that. That is the thing. So the Vedic takes it to such a degree as what is the exact nature of everything like that. Then you can understand, then understanding it from the point of Dharma, what is nature, then you can actually operate the system very efficiently. You know, then there's no problem, because it's just the way it is. It's not a matter of ego. You know, this lamp has a function, you know, and so we use it that way. But if our ego is that we say, it's a lamp, it should be used, you know, put oil in it. Oh, how can you say like that to the lamp? It was so insulting, you know. Why must it serve like this, you know? You know, it's
abuse.
Yeah, abuse, you know, lamp abuse. So it's you know, it just becomes a strange thing. It's just the obvious thing is that it's a lamp, it's made out of brass, so therefore it has to be polished in a certain way. You know, so you use tamarind and salt. Someone may complain, no, you should use first quality bath soap. You know, why you're discriminating? But it's brass, it's not skin. So therefore, you know, the same way as you won't use the tamarind and salt on your skin. You know, so one has to discriminate. So the Vedic culture needs refined intelligence, that's the thing. The modern doesn't need intelligence, it needs overwhelming sentiment. Like that, when the ocean of sentiments wash this way and that way, then you take, either you're the victim, or you're the perpetrator, or you're this, or you're that, or you must be understanding to the other person, or why is it everybody doesn't understand you, or... So there's all these contradictory things. The Vedic thing is, you must be understood, but you must understand others. So both have to be there. And the whole idea is that if this is understood, you understand yourself, you understand others. You understand what your need is, you understand what their need is, then there is no exploitation. Then no one is the victim. Like that. And no one is the exploiter. So one has to understand, otherwise then the whole problem is created. So the Vedic then works on, as you see what is the nature, and then establish it accordingly. But that's the proper system, that's Daiva Varnashram. The Asuric Varnashram means you just take the birth and then say, this person, because he's born in a Brahmin family, is a Brahmin. They're born in a Kshatriya family, they are Kshatriya. They're born in a Malecha family, they're Malecha. They can't understand that what is actually the nature. Because birth doesn't necessarily, you know, make the situation. You know, I mean, so many are born. You have the nice Brahmin, and he's out walking in the sun, he's perspiring, and that perspiration, and so many bugs in that are taking birth. So does that make them all Brahmins? This is Brahmin perspiration, right? The smell of the Brahmin, that's Brahminical, because it's all those bugs that create the smell are all Brahmins. So, you know, like that. So it doesn't make sense. So birth can't be. Birth may have something to do with it, because then one has that association, one is the consciousness of the parents, so many different elements are there, that there's a good chance that someone born in a particular family will have that nature, but it's not necessarily complete. And then there's the point of the soul. You have the soul, because the soul is separate and beyond, therefore you can't limit, it is not, it may be conditioned by the body, but it doesn't have to be. That's the point. It's not that it must be. You know? Yes.
All these reasons you have given are very good, but they're external. The real thing is that the person is born in a particular womb because of his karma. And so sinful people, they're born in the wombs of Sudras, Mlechas, Nishadas, and so on. And pious people are born in the wombs of Brahmin women, in Brahmin families.
Yes, I was just reading today that Sutta Goswami was explaining this point in the, I think, Sambhavana Parva, in the Adi Parva, I think. And so there he was explaining that all these, the big demons, because they happen to be oppressed by the demigods. The demigods were not appreciating the natural nature of the demons to exploit the universe. That they were obstructing their natural manifestation of their own, just personal needs. That they would defeat them in battle and, you know, send them back down to the, you know, lower planets and that. So because of this, because they wanted sovereignty, this was a great burning need within their heart. So then they would take birth on Earth and all these different species of life, not just even humans. You know, I mean, to be a king elephant, okay, but at least you're king. You know, you know, not being kicked around by these, you know, insensitive demigods like that. So then all these different persons, like, you know, Kalanini, big demon, then he took birth as Kamsa, and then all these others, they all took birth in these things. And then, so like that, then yes, you could say just the karma, and so therefore, you know, they've been born in that Brahmin family. But the point is then you have to establish that, what is Brahmin? Brahman is one who knows Brahman. So if that family knows Brahman, then you can say it's a Brahman family. But if they don't know Brahman, and their parents didn't know Brahman, then you may have the Brahminical genes, but because they don't know Brahman, then that definition is also external. Because then you're taking the body as the Brahman rather than the understanding or the position of consciousness of the soul. Is that?
And in Kali Yuga, the demons take birth in the family of Brahmins.
Brahmins, yeah. And that's also there, as mentioned in the Puranas. The demons take birth in the Brahmin families. Some say because then they understand that that's a better position to get elevated, so they take birth there to get, to become elevated. And, you know, others, then it's because they take birth there because then that's where they can make the most trouble. Because trouble is an inherent need of the demoniac mentality. So they should be allowed to express their demoniacness. Okay. 9 hours had passed. Covered by the malice of clouds, the sun had not yet been able to glance upon the earth. At dawn it rained with thudding drops, sounds of drip, drip. During the twelfth half hour, Devi and Shambhu ate khichdi. 12th half hour. Okay, so this must be in those, what do we call it?
You're just
doing gatis. Yeah, so when the sun come up, and then gatis, so this means noon, because a gati is 30 minutes, right? So 12th gati would be 12, means 6 hours, so 12 o'clock, like that. The Vaishnavas were delayed in their madhukari begging for alms. By the time the third 3-hour watch had passed, all the Vaishnavas had honored prasadam. Third 3 hours. So then you also, the day is divided into praharas. So there'll be 8 praharas in a day. So 4 in the day, 4 at night. So then if you say the third prahara is passed, that'll put it like 3 in the afternoon. Sun comes up at 6, then from 6 to 9 is the first, 9 to 12 is the second, 12 to 3 is the third, like this. So you have 4 in the day, 4 in the night. Now they stayed in one part of the Malati in Madhavi Vine Terrace and chanted the holy names on the beads. The Paramahamsa Babaji, Vaishnav Das, Pandit Ananta Das, who had just come from Nishingapali, Lahiri Mahashai and Yadava Das from Kulia were happily chanting the holy names on their Tulsibis. At that time, Vidyaratna Mahashai, Chaturbhuj Padaratna from Samudragar, Chintamani Nayaratna from Varanasi, Kalidas Vanaspati from Purvastali, or is this sounding serious? And the famous famous pandit Krishna Chudamani all came there. Wow, so you have a Vidyaratna, a Padaratna, a Nyayaratna, Vasaspati, and a Chudamani. The Vaishnavas very respectfully offered sitting places to their Brahmana Pandit guests. The Paramahamsa Babaji said, "It is said that a day overcast with clouds is a bad day indeed. However, for us it has become a good day, for many learned pandits who live in holy places have mercifully placed the dust of their feet in my cottage." Because they were naturally humbler than a blade of grass, the Vaishnavas saying, "We offer our respectful obeisances to the Brahmins." "We offer our respectful obeisances to the Brahmanas, bow down to offer their respects." Thinking themselves very learned and important, the Brahmanas responded by offering blessings. Jai. Vidyaratna had invited them there for a great debate. Because they were all younger than him, the Brahmanas bowed down before Lahiri Mahashai. Because he now understood the real truth, Lahiri Mahashai at once reciprocated by bowing down before the Brahmins. Among these pandits, Krishna Chudamani was the most eloquent. In Varanasi, Mithila, and many other places, he had defeated many pandits with the great power of his logic. He was short, splendidly dark, and grave. His eyes glistened like two stars. It was he who began the discussion with the Vaishnavas. He said, "Saying amongst ourselves, today we shall see the Vaishnavas. We have now come here. We do not think everything you do is very good, but we still think your single-pointed devotional service is very good indeed. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself has said in Bhagavad Gita 9:30, even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated. We offer our respectful obeisances to these words of Bhagavad Gita. Therefore, I have come here to see many saintly persons. However, we have another purpose also. It is this. On the pretext of devotional service, you associate with the Yavanas. I want to talk to you about that. One of you expert in debate should now please step forward." Pulling out his AK-47, then... "You got something to say?" Hearing Chudamani's words, the Vaishnavas became unhappy. The saintly Paramahamsa Babaji said, "I am a fool. What do I know of debates?" As great saints have acted in a saintly way, so we also try to act. You please repeat the teachings of the scriptures, and we will listen in silence. You just avoid the... let them say whatever they want to say, then go and, okay, then have a nice kirtan. Chudamani said, "What kind of talk is this? If the Hindus do not understand the scriptures, then the whole world will perish. You will act in a way that violates the scriptures, and then you will claim you are following the great saints. What is this? Of what saints do you speak? They are persons who follow the scriptures and teach the message of the scriptures, then they are saints indeed. But if the people follow anyone and everyone, calling them all great saints, and if they defend their actions by quoting the words, Mahajano yena kata sapanta, one should accept whatever progressive path the Mahajans advocate, then how can there be any auspiciousness in this world?" Hearing Chudamani's words, the Vaishnavas assembled in one of the cottages to decide what should be done. They came to this conclusion. When great saints are criticized, the Vaishnavas should, if they are able, defend them in debate. The Paramahamsa Babaji did not participate in this discussion. Although Pandit Anantadas Babaji had seen the farther shore of the Nyaya Shastra, everyone decided that Vaishnava Das should argue in the debate. Everyone could understand that Devidas Vidyaratna was the real cause of all this trouble. Staying among them, Lahiri Mahashai openly said, "Devi is very proud." His mind became agitated when he saw us associating with the Saint Nikazi. That is why he has brought all these pundits. Taking the dust of the Paramahamsa Babaji's feet, Vaishnava Das said, "I carry the Vaishnava's command upon my head. Today all my scholarship will be successful." By then all the clouds had gone. The sitting place was arranged in the grove of Malati and Madhavi vines. On one side were the Brahmana pundits, and on the other were all the Vaishnavas. All the Vaishnava pundits from Sri Godrum and Madhvamdvip came. Many Brahmanas and students from nearby also joined the meeting. It was not a small meeting. On one side were 100 Brahmin pundits, and on the other were 200 Vaishnavas. In case things get out of hand.
Ordered by Mahabharata.
Huh? It's
like meeting Mahabharata.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, yeah. Chivalry is always one of the main interesting. Ordered by the Vaishnavas, Vaishnav Das Babaji peacefully sat in front. Then something wonderful happened. When they saw it, the Vaishnavas happily shouted out the holy name of Madhari. The wonderful event was this. A cluster of Malati flowers spontaneously fell on Vaishnava Das's head. The Vaishnava said, "This is a sign of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy." On the other side, Krishna Chudamani turned up his nose and said, "You may think that, but flowers will. You may think that the flowers will not do. The tree is known by its fruits." Without showing any pride, Vaishnava Das declared, "Today's meeting in Navadvip is just like a meeting in Varanasi. This is a source of great joy. Although I live in Bengal, I stayed for a long time in Varanasi. There I studied and I also spoke in many meetings. Therefore, I am not accustomed to speak in Bengali. I wish that for today's meeting, the questions and answers shall be in Sanskrit." Joy. Although Chudamani had labored greatly in his scripture study, aside from memorizing some verses, he could not speak Sanskrit. Taken aback by Vaishnava Das's proposal, he said, "Why? For a meeting in Bengal, it is best to speak the Bengali language. I am not like the pundits in the western provinces. I cannot speak Sanskrit." Seeing this, everyone could understand that Chudamani was becoming afraid to debate with Vaishnava Das. Speaking together with one voice, everyone requested Vaishnava Das Babaji to speak in Bengali, and he agreed.
Good tactic.
To start the debate, Chudamani asked, "Is caste eternal? Are the Yamanas and the Hindus different castes? Does a Hindu fall down by associating with Yamanas?" Vaishnava Das answered, "In the Nyaya Shastra it is said that caste is eternal. However, the true difference is not seen among human beings born in different countries or in different situations. The real differences are birth as a goat or a cow or a goat or a human being. These are real differences." Then Chudamani said, "Yes, what you say is true. Still, are the Hindus and the Yavanas in different castes?" Vaishnava Das replied, "Yes. In one sense, there is a difference of caste. But that caste distinction is not eternal. The human race is one. Difference of language, country, garments, caste, and the like are only imaginary differences." Chudamani, "Are human beings different according to the differences of their birth? If this is not so, then is the difference between a Hindu and a Yavana only the difference of their clothing and other external things?" Vaishnava Das, "According to his past karma, the soul accepts a higher or lower birth. The differences of caste are considered according to how human beings are qualified to perform different kinds of work. The four castes are Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, and Shudra. All others are outcasts." Chudamani, "Are the Yavanas not outcasts?" Vaishnava Das, "Yes, in the conclusion of the scriptures, they are outcasts. They are outside the four castes." Chudamani, "If this is so, then how can a Yavana become a Vaishnava And how can a pious Vaishnava associate with a Yavana? Vaishnavdas. One who engages in... Did you say something?
No.
Oh, okay. One who engages in pure devotional service is a Vaishnava. Simply by being human, one is qualified to be a Vaishnava. Because they have taken a low birth, the Yavanas may not be qualified to perform the duties of the different castes. Nevertheless, they are perfectly qualified to engage in all the activities of devotional service. One who does not understand the subtle differences of the Karmakanda, Jnanakanda, and Bhaktikanda parts of the Vedas cannot be said to be truly learned in the scriptures. Good. By acting rightly, one becomes pure in heart. When the heart is purified, one is qualified to understand. When the heart is purified, one is qualified to understand transcendental knowledge. Among they who have attained transcendental knowledge, some are impersonalists and some are Vaishnavas, who believe in spiritual variety. In the beginning of spiritual life, one must perform pious deeds, karma. If one's pious deeds have attained their completion, one cannot become a Vaishnava. Must be have not attained. However, the Muslims are not qualified to perform pious deeds. Therefore, how can they ever become qualified to engage in devotional service? Vaishnavdas. Even outcasts can become qualified to engage in devotional service. This is accepted by all the scriptures. In the Bhagavad Gita 9:32 it is written, O son of Prita, those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, as well as Shudras, workers, approach the supreme destination. Here the word ashraya means engage in devotional service. Also in the Kashikanda it is said, either a Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra, or outcast, a person is most exalted if he engages in devotional service to Lord Vishnu. In the Narada Purana it is also said, O king, a dog-eater who is devoted to Lord Vishnu is better than a Brahmin. A sannyasi who is not devoted to Lord Vishnu is also inferior to such a dog-eater devotee. Chudamani, there are many scriptural quotes like that. How should these quotes be understood? That we must see. How can the defect that is attained by birth be removed by any means other than another birth? Vaishnavdas. The defect of a low birth comes from prarabdha karma, past karma that has begun to bear fruit. When one chants the holy names of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, those karmic reactions are thrown far away. In the Srimad Bhagavatam 6:16:44 it is said, merely by hearing the holy name of your lordship only once, even chandalas, men of the lowest caste, are freed from all material contamination. It is also it's amazing. Said, it's written here backwards. D-A-I-S. Dace. It is also Dace. Srimad Bhagavatam 6:2:46. Therefore, one who desires freedom from material bondage should adopt the process of chanting and glorifying the name, fame, form, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at whose feet all the holy places stand. One cannot derive the proper benefit from other methods, such as pious atonement, speculative knowledge, and meditation in mystic yoga. Because even after following such methods, one takes to fruitive activities again, unable to control his mind, which is contaminated by the base qualities of nature, namely passion and ignorance. It is also said, Bhagavatam 3:33:7, O how glorious are they whose tongues are chanting your holy name. Even if born in the families of dog-eaters, such persons are worshipable. Persons who chant the holy name of your lordship must have executed all kinds of austerities and fire sacrifices and achieved all the good manners of the Aryans. To be chanting the holy name of your lordship, they must have bathed at holy places of pilgrimage, studied the Vedas, and fulfilled everything required. Chudamani. Why is it then that an outcast who chants the holy name of Lord Hari is not qualified to perform yajñas and other rituals? Devidas, to perform yajñas and other rituals, one needs to take birth in a Brahmin's home.
person who takes birth in a Brahmana's home is not qualified to perform Vedic rituals after he... A person who takes birth in a Brahmin's home is not qualified to perform Vedic rituals. It says after he is in poverty beads, until after he has received the sacred thread. So an outcast who has become purified by chanting Lord Hari's name, but who has not taken birth in a Brahmin's home, cannot perform yajnas and other rituals. However, the various activities of devotional service are measurably better than the performance of Vedic yajnas. Trudumai, what kind of conclusion is that? That a person is not qualified for an ordinary thing can be qualified for an exalted thing. What is the clear proof of that? Vaishnav Das, human activities are of two kinds, one material and two spiritual. Even after becoming qualified, one may not necessarily be able to perform certain material activities. For example, a person born in a Yavana family may become purified, and spiritually speaking, may become a genuine Brahmana. Still, according to the material conception, he is still not qualified to marry a Brahmana's daughter. Trudumani, why not? What is wrong with that? Vaishnav Das, it is wrong to violate social custom. They who are proud of their material activities do not break social custom. And they who are qualified to make spiritual advancement do not break social custom either. Trudumani, how does one become qualified to perform material activities? How does one become qualified to perform devotional service? Vaishnav Das. One's nature, birth, and other things qualify one to engage in material activities. Faith in the truth qualifies one to perform devotional service. Trudumani, without overwhelming me with Vedanta vocabulary, want to talk or not? Please clearly tell me, what are the natures needed to perform the different kinds of duties? Without overwhelming me. Vaishnava Das, some qualities in the Brahma's nature are: 1. Peacefulness. 2. Self-control. 3. Austerity. 4. Purity. 5. Satisfaction. 6. Tolerance. 7. Honesty. 8. Devotion to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. 9. Mercy. And 10. Truthfulness. Some of the qualities in a Kshatriya's nature are: 1. Power. 2. Strength. 3. Determination. 4. Heroism. 5. Tolerance. 6. Generosity. 7. Perseverance. 8. Gravity. 9. Service to the Brahmins. And 10. Leadership. Some of the qualities in a Vaishya's nature are: 1. Religiosity. 2. Charity. 3. Faith. 4. Humbleness. And 5. Eagerness to become wealthy. Yeah. Some of the qualities in a Shudra's nature are: 1. Service to the Brahmanas, cows, and demigods. 2. Being satisfied with whatever is one's situation in life. Some of the qualities in an outcast nature are: 1. Impurity. 2. Untruthfulness. 3. Theft. 4. Atheism. 5. Senseless quarreling. 6. Lust. 7. Anger. And 8. Desire for material sense gratification. It appears that you can move this name here, outcast, and put, you know, Western or American. Except for he left out one. Pride. The scriptures teach that the different castes are... Oh, he said some. Yeah. Yeah. And some of the qualities, yes, means there's more. The scriptures teach that the different castes are determined by seeing these qualities. To determine the caste by birth alone is the materialistic practice of modern times. A person's natural inclinations and natural ability to learn different skills are to some extent determined by birth. Thus, one's nature makes him qualified to perform specific duties. The nature of many people is determined by their birth. From childhood, they manifest certain specific tendencies. In this way, it is seen that one's nature is determined by his birth. However, birth is not the only factor determining one's nature and one's fitness to perform certain kinds of work. There are many other factors also. For this reason, the scriptures affirm that in determining a person's fitness for a certain kind of work, one should examine his nature and qualities. Trudumani, what did you mean when you said
the words faith in the truth. That was what he said was the qualification of a Vaishnava. Vaishnav Das. When a person has in his heart sincere faith and trust in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, that is called faith. Prabhupada's definition. When a person is materialistic, he has an impure heart. In his heart has a false conception of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and is selfish, proud, and eager for fame. His faith is called insincere. Some saintly persons say that sincere faith means faith that follows the scriptural teachings. This kind of sincere faith makes one qualified to engage in devotional service. Chudamani. Various persons may possess this faith that follows the scriptural teachings, but they are not necessarily all exalted great souls. Are such persons qualified to engage in devotional service? Vaishnav Das. A person's nature makes him qualified to perform specific duties, but it does not necessarily qualify him to engage in devotional service. Please look at the explanation written in this page of Srimad Bhagavatam, 11.20, 27-30, and 32-33. Having awakened faith in the narration of my glories, being disgusted with all material activities, knowing that all sense gratification leads to misery, but still being unable to renounce all sense enjoyment, my devotee should remain happy and worship me with great faith and conviction. Even though he is sometimes engaged in sense enjoyment, my devotee knows that all sense gratification leads to a miserable result, and he sincerely repents such activities. When an intelligent person engages constantly in worshiping me through loving devotional service as described by me, his heart becomes firmly situated in me. Thus all material desires within the heart are destroyed. The knot in the heart is pierced and all misgivings are cut to pieces. And the chain of fruitive actions is terminated when I am seen as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Everything that can be achieved by fruitive activities, penance, knowledge, detachment, mystic yoga, charity, religious duties, and all other means of perfecting life is easily achieved by my devotee through loving service unto me. If somehow or other my devotee desires promotion to heaven, liberation or residence in my abode, he easily achieves such benedictions. Notice here it says, even if somehow or other. Right? That means just on the point of residing in my abode. You know, even if he decides that, still, you know, he easily achieves such benedictions. In this way, faith in devotional service develops. Chudamani, what if I have no respect for Srimad Bhagavatam? Well, we've got 200 people here who can work it out for you. Vaishnav Das. Srimad Bhagavatam teaches the conclusion of all the scriptures. The scriptures are one. If you do not respect Srimad Bhagavatam, then you insult all the other scriptures. I do not need to show evidence from many scriptures. Does everyone accept Bhagavad Gita? Think about that. When you first spoke from your mouth came a verse from Bhagavad Gita, a verse that contains the teachings of all scriptures. In the Bhagavad Gita 9.30.32 it is said, even if one commits the most abominable actions, if he is engaged in devotional service, he is to be considered saintly because he is properly situated. He quickly becomes righteous and attains lasting peace, O son of Kunti. Declare boldly that my devotee never perishes. O son of Prita, for those who take shelter in me, though they be of lower birth, women, Vaishyas, as well as Shudras, approach the supreme destination. These verses mean that a person who has faith in me alone, Ananya Bhak, and who engages in devotional activities of devotional service, which begin with hearing and chanting Lord Hari's holy names and the descriptions of Lord Hari, renounces all impious deeds, which are naturally sources of misery. He renounces material activities and he is considered saintly. In this way, he follows the glorious spiritual path. One path is the path of Karmakanda, which begins with the duties of Varnashram. A second path is the path of Jnanakanda, which begins with speculative knowledge and renunciation. Yes, interesting. Karmakanda means fruit of activity begins with varnashram. Otherwise, it's. Means you have the fruit of purpose, but you're not performing actually fruit of activities, you know, because you're not getting a pious result. In Jnanakanda, speculative knowledge and renunciation, that's where it starts. So this is, that's why then Shankara would say, first let's take sannyas, then we'll talk about the speculative knowledge. The third path is to stay among the devotees and have faith in the holy names of Lord Hari and the descriptions of Lord Hari. Sometimes these three paths are considered yogas. In this way, they are called Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, and Bhakti Yoga. Some people practice these different yogas. Thus, they are called Karma Yogi or Jnana Yogi. Among these yogis, the Bhakti Yogi is the best. For in Bhakti Yoga, one attains limitless auspiciousness. At the end of the first six chapter section of Bhagavad Gita, 647, one may see the following conclusion. And of all yogis, who abides in me with great faith and worshipping me in transcendental loving service, is most intimately united with me in yoga and is the highest of all. One must properly understand the meaning of Bhagavad Gita 9.31. This verse means that a person who faithfully engages in devotional service quickly casts far away all faults in his character and activities. A person who engages in devotional service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead becomes pious. For the Supreme Personality of Godhead is Himself the root of all piety. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself is conquered by devotional service. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead stays in a person's heart, the bondage of Maya is at once thrown far away. Such a person need not adopt any other process to become free from Maya. Whether he performs material pious deeds or not, a devotee's heart is naturally filled with piety and saintliness. Lust is then thrown far away, and in its stead, peacefulness enters his heart. The Supreme Lord Himself promises, "My devotee will never perish." The karmic jnani may fall into bad company, but my sincere devotee will never fall into bad company, for he always has me as his companion. Therefore, he will never fall down. Whether born in a sinful family or a Brahmin family, a devotee always has the supreme goal of life in the palm of his hand. Chudamani. Look, my scriptures says, the qualification that comes from the birth is the best. I was born in a Brahmin's home. By chanting the Gayatri Mantra and performing other like duties, I will gradually attain transcendental knowledge. And at the end, I must attain liberation. How does faith arise? I do not know. I see that Gita and the Bhagavatam teach that faith leads to devotional service. Please explain what the soul must do to attain that faith. Vaishnava Das. Faith is part of the soul's eternal nature. The duties of varnashram and other like duties arise when the soul's temporary nature is manifested. That is the conclusion of all scriptures. In the Chandogya Upanishad 7.19.1 it is said, a person who has faith can understand. A person who has no faith cannot understand. A person who has faith can understand. Therefore, one should ask about faith. O Master, I wish to know about faith. Some philosophers define the word faith as trust in the words of the Vedas and the spiritual master. That is not a wrong definition. However, it is not very clear. In my Sampradaya, faith is described in these words, Amnaya Sutra 57. Faith is a specific activity performed in the heart. It makes one desire to engage in devotional service. It is different from the other means of spiritual advancement.
Isn't the Amnaya Sutra written by Bhaktivinoda Kwan?
Of course.
Okay.
Written or revealed, we don't know.
Okay.
Whatever. Means so many of these Vaishnava truths then means you can find it here. It's just like the Dasamul was given by Lord Chaitanya, but it was never written as such, so Bhaktivinoda Thakur then wrote that down. You know, so many of the teachings that were there, or it's just like Lord Chaitanya's commentary on Vedanta. Then was there, it was known, but then it became written by Baladev. So many times these things are revealed, but then at some point then somebody takes it and establishes it. By associating with devotees and repeatedly hearing from them, a person becomes convinced in his heart that ordinary pious deeds, karma, impersonal speculation, jnana, and the gymnastics of yoga will not help him reach the eternal destination. And that destination cannot be attained by any means other than sincerely taking shelter of Lord Hari's feet. When one thinks in this way, he naturally attains faith in the words of the Vedas and the spiritual master. The nature of this faith is described in these words, Amnaya Sutra. Means he's just saying the words, it's in brackets, Amnaya Sutra. Faith is characterized by taking shelter of the Lord and surrendering unto Him. Thus it is seen that taking shelter of the Lord and surrendering unto Him is the external symptom of faith. This surrender and taking shelter are described in these words, Sri Hari Bhakti Vilas 11417. The six divisions of surrender are the acceptance of those things favorable to devotional service, the rejection of unfavorable things, the conviction that Krishna will give protection, the acceptance of the Lord as one's guardian or master, full surrender and humility. Thus one makes the following vow: I will do whatever is favorable for pure devotional service, and I will reject what is not favorable for it. The Supreme Personality of Godhead is my protector. By being active in impersonal speculation, jnana, yoga, and other activities, I cannot attain anything of value. I cannot protect myself. I will serve the Lord as far as I am able, and He will protect me. In this way, I will be protected. Who am I? I am His property. Whatever He wishes, that I will do. In this way, I will offer myself to Him. I own nothing. I am poor and lowly. In this way, one understands his lowly position. Full surrender, then, is the who am I? I am His property. And whatever He wishes, I will do. In this way, I'll offer myself to Him. And then the humility is, I am nothing, I am pure and lowly. Yeah, and then Krishna is my maintainer. By being active in personal speculation, jnana, yoga, and other activities, I cannot attain anything of value. And with that, so only in devotional service, then, we'll get. So Krishna becomes the maintainer. Not that by I do all these things I will get something of value. I cannot protect myself. So by serving the Lord as best as we are able, He will protect me. In this way I will be protected. In this way one understands his lowly position. When this vow, along with trust, confidence that the Lord will give protection, complete self-surrender, trust, confidence, complete self-surrender and humility are manifested in the heart. This is called faith.
I think in the beginning you said symptoms of surrender.
But here he's kind of like, these are the six symptoms. And we're just seeing if there's connection here. Confidence, complete self-surrender and humility. Trust, trust the Lord's maintenance. And then, So when these are manifested, that is called faith. When this faith is manifested in the heart, one is qualified to engage in devotional service. This faith is the first step to becoming pure and eternally liberated. This faith is part of the soul's eternal nature. All spiritual paths that differ from this faith are temporary in their nature. Okay, so we should probably have any questions on this?
Not clear about why he was saying a Vaishnava, so-called outcaste, is not qualified to perform material. Okay. And he even says he cannot marry a Brahmana. What does it mean?
Well, he's saying that the Vaishnava doesn't go against the social customs. But social customs here basically means, specifically means, the Vedic social customs. But at the same time, it's one honors whatever the local customs are also. In other words, Vaishnava is not trying to create problems. He's not, the other person, by pride, follows the social customs because we are a good family, we are this, we are that. But one also, then there's the person who is proud and because of his pride doesn't follow You know, the modern terminology is called in your face, like that. But the Vaishnavas aren't like that. They just do whatever is the custom, they'll follow, as long as it's not against the principles of devotional service. You know, if they need to be in such situations. You know, it's just like if you're in the West and you have an outside job, then you need to follow the customs of the job if they're not against devotional service. You know, so you may have to say yes, sir, and this and that, and, you know, have certain rituals or dress in a certain way. They want you in, you know, a suit and tie, or they want you in casual. They, you know, they don't want you with long hair. They don't want you to wear sandals and shorts and t-shirts. You know, you follow whatever is the custom that's expected. You know, the dealings and, you know, the vocabulary you use and all that. But if it's against devotional service, you know, they expect you to come out to a party and, you know, do all kinds of nonsense, then that you can decline from. You know. So, in other words, the Vaishnava is not proud, so he doesn't flaunt his Vaishnavness like that. So therefore that's one aspect. Another aspect is many times you see is because of the nature of what they expect. You grow up in one family situation, the dealings are one thing, and then you grow up in another family situation, the dealings are different. You know? So let us say someone grows up in a sophisticated environment, someone grows up in an unsophisticated environment. So both may be devotees, but in their day-to-day performance of duties, household duties, they expect things to work in a certain way. So one may be very gross in performing those duties, and the other may not be. Does that make sense? So this, most of the time, you find it means devotees themselves having problem in their marriage aren't because they're devotees, right? It's because their material conditioning being different, they expect something different from the marriage. It means you yourself, you grew up in an environment, and you expect naturally that this is how family life will work. Either it's the way your family life that you grew up in was nice and you want just a copy like that, or you grew up in it and saw that there were a few things that you wanted to change, and by either your own understanding or by seeing others or by their influence, then you have adjusted that. So that is your idea of family life. Right? But then someone else may have a completely different experience. So the modes of nature are so wonderful. When you put a boy and girl together, it doesn't matter from what culture or anything, when they're first together, then they're just working on the wonderfulness of the, how you say, the festivity of a display of hormonal activity. And because of that, then the whole world is wonderful. You know, why just their relationship? The whole world is wonderful. Like this. You know? So then naturally they're not in that, you know, in that euphoria, they're not going to actually notice the difference in their conditioned natures. Right? Because they're together just because one's a boy and one's a girl. They're both humans, and one's boy and one's girl. That's the only qualification. But then besides that, how they would keep their stuff, you know, how they would keep, you know, how they're going to deal with the tube of toothpaste, you know, for example, may be completely different. And so, unless it's the same, they're going to drive each other nuts. You know, one squeezes from the end and then, you know, rolls it up, and the other one just grabs it in the middle and crinkles it all up. You know, and so then, naturally, sorry for hitting too close to home, really. Very internal, major internal problems within the Grihastha ashram. You know, like that. You know, so little things like that, it's just how it was dealt is makes for a complete difference in how one works. Does that make some sense? Like that. So therefore, then it's recommended that they don't. Even if one's a Vaishnava, one still stays within one's own community like that. So where there is a traditional training and all that, then that's easy to see in India. You know? And also across the social things, the species also think differently, act differently. You know, I mean, within human beings, different species, they act differently. But ultimately, it's not so important if they are on a, you know, situated nicely in devotional service. But the difficulty is marriage life basically means that there is conditioned needs. And so those conditioned needs basically have their form that they follow. And so if those forms aren't similar, so that must be seen, is that at least the forms are similar. The needs, the needs what they're looking for in marriage are the same. The methods that they'll use are the same. Then it's much easier. Otherwise, then they have to be aware of it, and as Vaishnavas, be, you know, tolerant and understanding, and try to work things out in a very open, straightforward way. You know, pleasant. You know, straightforward doesn't mean it. One's at one side of the house throwing the dishes, and the other's the other side, and, you know, blocking it all with chairs and stuff. You know, I mean, it's one way of working it out, but it means that one is able to discuss, because if we're not the body, and we're not the mind, intelligence, ego, but we're conditioned to it, then you can openly talk about, you know, my mind, intelligence, and ego are thinking it's going to go this way, and you think it's that way, so then we work it out. Okay, we can do like this. Now I understand, you understand this stuff. But otherwise, it's one has to be very careful. Otherwise, you see many times it's nice. It seems to be, but many times when you the difference of the background is so great, sometimes then, you know, after a few months, then the differences just become so obvious that people can't handle it. Yeah. Is that okay?
Two examples come to my mind. The two Brahmanas in the story of the Sakshi Gopala, where the elder Brahman promises his brother to the young Brahman because he helped him, and he said, no, because you are from a very wealthy family, very educated family. They were both Brahmans,
yeah. But
just different level of education, so the family will not accept, it's against your convention. And also the case of Sanatana Goswami and Haridas, which was not entering Jagannath temple because, as a tradition, was not supposed to be for people connected with Muslim background.
Mm. It's there. But for Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, then he was trying to establish the point that Vaishnavas are minimum Brahmins. Because Brahman is the lowest level of Vaishnava. You know, because that's the conditioned nature, and then it goes beyond. So at least on the understanding of Brahman, you see those qualities that are mentioned that a devotee, that a Brahman has, a Vaishnava has those. Though he may not have the nature or interest in the technical, Brahminical, occupational duties. You know? I mean, even here we see, you know, Mr. Chudamani here wanted to avoid, you know, all the Sanskrit and the Vedanta Sutra. Otherwise, you know, just on that he probably would have ground him into the ground. But, you know, he just said, you know, let's avoid, you know, too much heavy Vedantic vocabulary here. You know? So that's good points. See, also Jarit Karu, when he wanted to get married, so his similarity that he was going to pick was that the girl had to be named Jarit Karu. Because he got the name, not from birth, he got the name from activity. Because Jarit means big, so he had a big body. But by austerity, he reduced it down to nothing. So Karu means waste. So this big body was wasted away. So he said, I'll only marry a girl who has the same name. Because you don't give a girl the name Jarit Karu. You know, it's not a pleasant name or this. You know, you name it after something auspicious and nice and this. So then a girl who had this name means she was very austere and all that. So then there would be a nature. The two could match. But he was lamenting because he is poor, being a Yayavara. They're the Yayavara sect. They don't stay anywhere. They have no house. They have no possessions. They just wander. They just go from holy place to holy place and stay however long they like. Wherever, when the sun starts to go down, that's their house for the night. If they're out in the field, that's where they lay down. They're under a tree, that's where they lay down. If they're in a temple, that's where they lay down. So his point was then to his forefather, who's going to give the girl to me? You know, I have nothing. You know? Not only that, then... You know, so therefore, because he was like this, then he, the demand also was that who's giving the girl in charity should maintain her. So the father or brother or whoever is making the arrangements, the guardian, they should maintain the girl because he doesn't have anything to maintain. Right? So there is definitely, your point is, even within this, there's differences. And if you get technically into this, like you said, within the Brahmins, there's always some divisions. And sometimes one group of Brahmins won't even accept or eat anything in the house of another group of Brahmins, you know, because their standards are not high enough. Like that. When we were doing some research, then some Brahmins, you know, because they were so much into the purity, then when they would have special clothes for puja, and they would wash those and hang them in a specific place, and they would not be touched. Because during the day, you know, you go into the bathroom, you do this, you do that, so you're not really up to the puja standard. So if you come into the area and, you know, take down the clothes, fold them up, and, or walk by them and bump into them or that, then they're not really on the highest standard of cleanliness. So therefore, they just wash them, hang them there, only the next morning when they take their bath and they're ready, they take them down. And then some, that's similar family, then that's the men of the family for doing the puja. The women have special clothes they only wear in the kitchen. They take their bath, put those clothes on, do the cooking, finish the cooking and all that, wash those clothes, hang them up in the kitchen. And then they put on another cloth for the daily, you know, moving around. So now other Brahmin family won't have that standard. So then they'll consider, oh, we go to this Brahmin's house, they're not clean. Even though they may be way cleaner than everybody else, but because they have that kind of standard, then, you know. Or one devotee was telling me, from an aristocratic family, you know, not Brahminical families, aristocracy. And in their house, then, because it was joint family, then you have a big area for, you know, toilets and bathrooms and bathing areas, and all this is all there in one area. So when you come out of the toilet, you can't touch the tap because your hands are dirty. Someone else, a member of the family, has to turn it on for you. Right? And generally there's always someone there, though occasionally the devotee mentioned that once or twice he got stuck for about 20 minutes, half an hour, until someone came from, you know, one of the other places, because it's a big house, you know. Everybody was out and like that. And then not only that, when they'd wash their hands, then they would take the bar of soap in their right hand, and while the water's pouring, they would move it, and then with the soap from that, they'd wash the left hand. Then after it's been washed a bit, then they'll put it together and like this. And this is just a Vaishya family. This is not even a Brahmin family. So that level of Vaishyas, they were top level of aristocracy. So naturally then, the standards that would be in just some general aristocracy, general Vaishya family, you know, would be below their standard. You know, like that. So even within, then there's definitely... So the whole point is what you expect, the standard of, you know, the living, cleanliness, the dealing, the responses, the duties, how those duties will be taken, you know, the steadiness, you know, the level of wealth, you know, and facilities. All these things are considered. Because when someone says, I'll get married, they naturally think all the things I want are there. You know? And then another person is thinking that. So if they're similar, then you can make it work. And if they're not, or one of them has to be willing to completely adjust.
A couple of comments. One lady was telling us that she was from a smarter Brahmin family. She was renting a house from some Vaishya family who were Vaishnavas. But she was always thinking, if the landlady comes to my house, I'm not going to let her inside my kitchen. She just had that, you know, thing worked out in her mind. If she ever wants to walk into my kitchen, I'm going to tell the landlady, you can't come in here. This is a Brahmin's kitchen. I'm renting the place from you. Even though it's your house, you're not allowed inside my kitchen. She said later on she was surprised when she found out that she wasn't allowed inside the landlady's kitchen.
Touché.
Thank you. Or Vaishnavas, though Vaishnavas, they had a higher standard
than she had in her
house. Yeah, I was also thinking that sometimes we think that we have a home standard, so we don't have to follow such high standards like in the temple. Mm-hmm. But in many Brahmin families, they won't go into the kitchen until they've taken a bath, and they follow all the same standards that we follow in the Dini kitchen, in their home kitchen. Mm-hmm.
The standards we follow are standards. These are just what most good families, this is just the way they run their house. It's a very good part. It's not that it's there. So you see some, they get temple standards then way beyond. Like in Kerala, they have these pots with spouts on them. They have really big ones. And when they're walking from one place to another, going from, like, say, the Didi room to the Pujari room or like that, they pour this water in front and they'll walk in that water. They won't. So many little things like this. So the standards that they get into are so much. Because the gross only comes up to a certain level and stops, basically. Then there's the subtle. So basically what's been established is the main principles of just proper cleanliness, that's all. And not like exotic. Exotic then gets into the difference between you've taken a glass of water and without touching your mouth you pour it into your mouth. Then you wash your hands because your hands are dirty. Most people say your hands aren't dirty. But because you drank the water, it was your water then. So then it becomes... contaminated means you can't touch anything that's bodha or anything that's spiritual because it's on a lower level like that. So that then is Prabhupada said that's Brahman.
Prabhupada used to do that after drinking water, you'd do achana.
Yeah, because Prabhupada said that's Brahman. Because they can tell the difference in the subtlety between the two. So let alone a person who just picks it up and touches their mouth and then complains, we chant or don't be fanatic, then how they'll understand the subtleties between contamination and means by gross, means uchishta, means it's contaminated, and that it's subtly puja unclean, means prashad and boga and this and that. So it's, these are subtleties. So then that's where you start getting into the seriously for the higher levels.
Another thought I was having when you were speaking about the on the point of Haridas and also Shri Gopal, the two Brahmins there. And then you commented that Brahman, Bhakti Siddhama Saraswati, was establishing the point that Brahman, Brahman is the lowest standard of a Vaishnava. Mm-hmm. Is that the word used? And it brought to mind Bhaktivinoda Thakura's definition of a Kanishta Adhikari in the commentary to Manushimsha, where he says a Kanishta Adhikari, Vaishnava, means a caste, non Goswami line or a caste, Vaishnava, Brahman family, they're Kanishta Adhikari.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, because for them, Varnashram and all that, that is their service. That's why it's like you have Dasyam Sakyam Atmanivedanam. They also represent the Kanista Madhyamanta. Because Dasyam means Varnashram, or service, like in that kind of way. Mm-hmm. So then that's considered the Kanista because they consider that we do the thing, get those results, those results are of substance, rather than the devotion itself is the main. Because the need for the thing. The Madhyama then, friendship means is preaching. The Adman Nivedana means full surrender, so that's not the Uttam. Mm-hmm. That's explained in Nectar Devotion. Mm-hmm. Though it has two forms, that Dasya. One is the aspect of Arnashya, but then Rupa Goswami says, but some say, then it goes into a different realm. It's not considering the Varnashram. It just means the... Because Varnashram can't give devotional service, so therefore... it's a matter of it's engaged in devotional service as a
part of the process. So he splits it there. So it's probably splitting it between just sampradayak and those who are, you know, Vaishnava, they accept the Lord.
And Bhaktivinoda Thakur was saying that the caste Goswamis, they are Kanishthas, those who receive Diksha, means Bhagavad Diksha, in a Shiksha language, Shiksha Bhagavad Parampara, their Madhyams, and those that go into Bhav, Sadhana, whatever,
Bhav also mentions that the, he mentions that second initiation then. One should be at the Madhyama platform. Mm. You know, that's the symptom of Madhyama. So he's probably quoting that from Bhakti Nirmala. Mm. Mm. Yes, otherwise we'll end. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama, Rama Hare Hare. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.